It's Tuesday, the 9th of February, 2016. Happy birthday to KJ McDaniels and Jameer Nelson. Welcome to the Red Rock Fantasy Basketball Monster Podcast, brought to you by moneyball.com.au and GJ All Day. My name is Josh Lloyd, and if you want to be a sponsor of the podcast like GJ All Day, all you need to do is leave a review on iTunes and you can become a sponsor of the show. It is fantastic to everyone who has done that, all 500 plus of you guys who have left iTunes reviews. Thank you very, very much. Even though the contest has ended, I'll probably restart it at some point, the jersey contest. If you've got 5 minutes spare, I do really appreciate anyone going and leaving that review there. It only takes a couple of minutes and it helps the show out immensely. To thank you for everyone who's done that so far. Also, a big thanks go out to moneyball.com.au, Australia's best daily fantasy sports site. If you're into playing daily fantasy, or even if you haven't given it a go, go and jump on Moneyball. Throw a few dollars in. Maybe you'll do all right by listening to this podcast and taking some of the tips. I know a lot of people who have been listening recently have been doing pretty well in their tournaments. And we've been having a pretty nice run of things going on lately. So, hey, why don't you try like throw a few dollars into Moneyball, and I reckon you'll come out with some nice cash on the other side. Hopefully, that's the idea. Anyway, all right, let's get stuck into today's stuff. Before we get into the lines of the night, I've got a couple of things I want to do. Go through the Instagram and Facebook contests of the day on Facebook for Monday's games. The contest was Chris Paul. How many combined assists, steals, and three pointers would he get? The total was 11, and Jeff Mikulka guessed it. So congratulations to Jeff. Don't forget on Facebook and on Instagram every day. Instagram is at redrock_bball. So I'd appreciate if you go over there and follow the page there. And facebook.com/redrockbasketball. We have one player per day with a certain contest to guess. Go and do it. It's a little bit of fun guessing the totals of certain categories that I pick. Tag your mates in the post as well. Get them to go in there and have a contest between yourself and your mates and other Red Rock listeners. That's always a good bit of fun. So Chris Paul was the Monday Facebook one. Jeff Mikulka got that right. On Instagram, it was Anthony Davis. How many points will AD score? He scored 27. And Mutag, who is on Instagram at... I've got no idea how to say this. Lytulong with a zero. I'm sure that's a terrible butcher, but there you go. Lytulong with a zero. Horrible. Mutag. Congratulations, you guessed Anthony Davis at 27 points. Tuesday's Instagram contest is going to be LaMarcus Aldridge. How many combined points and rebounds? And Tuesday's Facebook contest is going to be James Harden. How many turnovers and free throw attempts will Jim have? I'll put both of those up on those respective sites during the day. Go ahead, give your guess, tag one of your mates as well, and get them guessing in the contest as well. I know a couple of people did that today. Spider Dan was one of them, tagged one of his friends in the Instagram post. Really great stuff, so thank you to Spider Dan for doing that. Before we get into the monstrous line of the night, a player who's been garnering a lot of attention on forums, and I do scour a lot of fantasy basketball forums, the Basketball Monster one, obviously, in the comment section there is the main one, and I'm obviously the most active there. But the Reddit Fantasy Basketball subreddit, which is, what is it, Fantasy B-Ball, Reddit/Fantasy B-Ball, whatever, that's the one. And over at the RotoWorld forums as well, I look through those ones. And a player whose name is coming up a lot is Al Jefferson. Now, you've heard me talk about Al Jefferson quite a bit on this podcast, and I've been quite down on him. I feel like I'm in the minority. I know Kyle McEwen is also not that excited about him, but everybody seems to be predicting big things from Al Jefferson. I talked about it yesterday with some players. Did I talk about it? Maybe I tweeted it out. But everyone has got massive high hopes for Al Jefferson. He's going to come back. He's going to play 30 minutes. The Hornets are going to push him. He's going to be back to better than last year's numbers or equal to last year's numbers. He's going to be putting together big numbers, grab him off your waiver wire, all that sort of stuff. He was garbage before he got injured this season. But not before the second injury, before the first injury and before the marijuana suspension. He was bad. I had a look at some of his numbers. Look, you know what? And all of this, I could be wrong very, very easily. He could come back and he could be 2014 Al Jefferson and lead the Hornets to a playoff spot and put up big numbers and be massive and monstrous and all that sort of stuff. He could be a 20 and 10 Al Jefferson. Probably won't, is my guess. He's played 19 games this season. He started 17 of them. He's only playing 25 minutes a game. Now, he only played two games when he came back from the injury and he played off the bench. So he was playing limited minutes before his injury. He's averaging 12.5 and 6 on the season. One block, 0.7 steals. His field goal percentage is at 48. His free throw percentage is well down at 57 as well. But the minutes are well down. And a lot of things he's doing are the worst he's doing in his career. Now, no one has any respect for Cody Zeller. I understand that, because his numbers don't show up necessarily well on the stat sheet. He's a much better rim protector than what Al Jefferson is. Much better. And I think that Steve Clifford is going to prefer Zeller over Jefferson, or at least give them a minute split, because what they do offensively, it doesn't fit with Jefferson anymore. He was the primary option in 2013-14, and to a degree last year in 14-15. That's not the case anymore. It's Nick Batum. Nick Batum is number one on this team. Kemba Walker is number 1B. They're the two top guys. Jefferson is probably 3, maybe 4. He's well down, and he's slow. He's old. He's frail. He gets his knee has been a problem for him. It was a massive problem for him last year. It's a problem again now. Had the calf problem again. Lower leg injuries in old men, it's not a good situation. His numbers are well down. If you look at his advanced stats, he's got a PER of 17.6, the worst number since his rookie or his second year in the league. His defensive box score plus minus is 1.3, which is the worst it's been in a couple of years. His offensive box score plus minus is negative 2.4, the worst since his second season. He's given a negative overall box score plus minus of negative 1.1, which he hasn't had in 6 years. His point differential on-off numbers are negative. The Hornets' offense is better when he is on the bench, and the defense is better when he is on the bench. These are things that are not good for him. They're not saying a lot of stuff. Now, he could come back. But I think there's a lot of brand name recognition with Al Jefferson, and there's a lot of, I remember he was a 20 and 10 guy. I remember when he was decent last year. He was not decent this year. And if you go back to maybe 2 or 3 podcasts before he got injured this year, I think I was mentioning, you know what, Al Jefferson, is at the way he's going, he's not going to be ownable for the whole season. I think that was before he got injured. He just wasn't looking good. He doesn't fit what they do. They were phasing him out of the play. He'd play limited minutes. He wouldn't play down the stretch. Zeller is the better rim protector. He doesn't put up the same sort of stats, but that's not what it's about for NBA coaches. And I say this time and time again. Now, when I speak of Terrence Jones, he might play, and if he plays 30 minutes, the fantasy stats are great, but doesn't mean he's a good on-the-court player. Tony Roden, best example of that. He would put up just counting stats out of his ass. Terrible player. Terrible. So much so that he got cut by the Sixers and hasn't been signed by anyone. Jefferson, yes, he will put up more scoring. He'll probably grab more rebounds than Cody Zeller. His field goal percentage will probably look nicer. But that doesn't necessarily translate to him being a better guy. What I'm saying all this for is that you see it everywhere. And look, probably 95% of you listening to this will disagree with me. And will be like, Josh, come on. I'll take the chance on Al Jefferson. I think that he's going to be Al Jefferson from 2 years ago. Why not? I could get 17 and 8 off the waiver wire with a block and a steal and 50% shooting. You're crazy. What are you talking about? And that's okay. But what I'm saying that if you've got Al Jefferson, if you've had him stashed on your bench, or if you've picked him up, if he was on your IR spot or you've just picked him up, trade him now before he plays. Because the recognition of his name, I think, is going to be far greater than what his production is. That's what I'd be. And I tweeted this out today, and someone got back to me. Isn't it best to wait until he plays? I think it's the opposite. Once he plays, people will go, "Oh, yuck! What's this? What are these numbers? He's playing 18 minutes off the bench. This is not what I want." Optimism for Al Jefferson is through the roof at the moment. It might be rightfully so. I don't think that it is. I'd be exploring trades. If you can get someone that's a top 60 player back for him, which you might be able to do. Do it straight away. I would absolutely be doing that immediately, because there are people who believe in Al Jefferson coming back and being, you know, almost all-star Al Jefferson. I'm not one of them. And again, hey, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, whatever, send me a message. Tell me that you disagree. I'll go back and forward and have discussions, which I've done across these forums pretty much all day today, and going back and forward with people. I just don't see the role for him. But it could be an opportunity if you did happen to pick him up. or if you did have him stashed in an IR spot, which is fine if you had no one else to use in that IR spot, fine. I've had him stashed in the listener league for the whole time he's been injured. He just sat there because I had no one else who was injured, and I've got him there, and I thought, let's just see how it plays out. Maybe someone will make an offer for me, whatever. He's sitting there. Hey, and that if you're in my Red Rock listener league, if you want old Jefferson, send me an offer. Have a look. Have a look to see what you can explore, because I feel once he hits the court, his value will go down. At the moment, we're all playing in, yes, he's going to be great. He's going to put up big numbers. I don't think that's going to be the case. Again, I could be very wrong, but I could also not be. Let's get into the rest of the stuff from the show, the normal segments.
Let's get to it.
I just needed Michael Bolton to lead us off, and there he is. Mix at it. The monstrous line of the night. If you're trying to look at the jerseys behind me, you're not going to get it. You're not going to guess it because I don't have this guy's jersey or I don't have this team's jersey yet. It's still coming. It's on the way. Kyrie Irving of the Cleveland Cavaliers. Speaking of guys that the perception of players is weird, and Al Jefferson, I think the perception of him is too high. Kyrie Irving's perception was way too low when he was injured and even when he came back. He is a top 15 player. He's a top 15 fantasy player very comfortably, and it was going to take him a bit of time to get going, but he is flying at the moment. 32 points, 5 triples, 3 rebounds, 12 assists, a block on 13 of 21 shooting. The numbers for the season, they don't look overly great, but in the last week, he's played 37 minutes a game, and guess where he is? He's inside the top 15. He's ranked 13th. 26.5 points, 2.3 triples, 6.5 assists, 0.8 steals, 3 rebounds, 55 and 94%. These are all great numbers, obviously. And he was a guy, yes, you had to wait a month or so at the start of the season for him to come back, and that was a pain, but we're talking a top 15 guy here. I have him in one league. I drafted him in the 40s, and now, hopefully, I haven't left it too late, but I'm going to get myself a top 15, top 20 guy for the rest of the season. His DFS salary hasn't caught up. He was fantastic again today, and he's making this team's offense look very, very potent. He is an underrated fantasy player. He was underrated last season. He's underrated this year. He's going to continue to be underrated because, one of the reasons why is because people see Kyrie Irving had a game. He's a point guard. He had 0 assists. Get out of here. What is this? That's people's impression. I'm not saying it's you guys that are listening, but it's people's impression. And again, it's all to do with psychology of fantasy basketball. The game's not entirely psychology. There's a lot of maths involved. There's a lot of watching. There's a lot of understanding and listening and memory. But psychology is a big part of it. Irving, he's not good. 0 assists in the game. What kind of point guard is that? I'll tell you what it is. He's a good point guard. He's potentially the best dribbler in the NBA. I know Steph Curry would have something to say about that. He is a dynamic scorer. He's a great shooter. He can do a lot for this team. And he can do a lot for your fantasy team. Again, a top 15 season last year with Love and with LeBron James on board. It shows what he can do. And he's basically doing that right now at the moment. So Kyrie, big, big game from him. The waiver wire line of the night. This is why I have that Phoenix Suns jersey up there. And the Suns, I didn't know which jersey to pick. They got about 7 jerseys to pick, but I went with the purple. I'm happy with how it looks. PJ Tucker. He played 46 minutes out of a possible 48. 16 and 5. 2 assists, 5 steals on 7 of 10 shooting. PJ Tucker is owned in, I could not believe how few leagues he's owned in, about 40% of leagues. I don't understand it. He's a top 75 player the last 2 weeks. But you know what? It comes down to a guy, he averages 8.8 points. 8.8 points? Crap. That's not me saying it. That's a general idea with people. Don't get sidetracked by the first column because he's hitting a 3 a game. 6 rebounds as a shooting guard is ideal. 3 assists is basically above average. 2 steals is fantastic. And then his percentages need a little work, but you want a guy that gives you steals. You want an out-of-position rebounder who then also adds 3s into the game. PJ Tucker's your man. I don't think the minutes are going anywhere. He's averaging 38 over the last 2 weeks. He's going to be playing 34, 35-plus, I would imagine, for the rest of this season. He fits a very specific team. We know that. He was dreadful to start the season, but so many Suns players were. He is definitely coming around at the moment and really starting to put together some decent numbers and the sort of numbers that we not expect from him, but what we've got from him the last couple of years. And many people will remember what PJ Tucker was able to give them over the course of the last two seasons, when he was a very, very underrated player, and he was a guy that you were able to pick up off the waiver wire, and hey, you can do it again. The young gun of the night. So I two or three days ago, I said, you know what, I've got to really reconsider this guy's position as a must-own standard league player, because he's not doing anything. His next two games have been fantastic. Maybe he needed the Red Rock prod up the arse. Lord Alfred Payton played 41 minutes and had 20 points, including 8 of 15 shooting. He hit two triples. This is completely out of character for him. 4 rebounds, 7 assists, 3 steals, and 1 block. Payton is a guy that over the course of the season has hit 21 three-pointers. In his last two games, he has hit 4. That is how out of character that is for him. He is getting back recently to looking like the guy we saw at the end of last year. His last four games are 11, 3.5, and 7. A steal, a 3, half a block. The concern with him with percentages is still real. He's a 43 and 61 guy. The 43 is not too bad. 61 is not great for a guard, but the attempts makes them recoverable from. But he's looking a lot better. And when I mentioned the other day, I said, yes, he is a guy that potentially you want to drop, but you have to really look at the way your team is and who you'd be adding. He does have pretty good upside. He's a better player than Shabazz Napier, no doubt about that. CJ Watson suffering from Brandon Wright syndrome, in that he had an injury and it was day-to-day, and now no one knows anything about him anymore. We just don't hear anything about CJ Watson anymore. Oh yeah, he's got a calf and he'll be back in 2024. That's the sort of vibe we're getting from the Magic on Watson. Yeah, Payton should be playing big minutes. Skiles is going to stuff around with stuff. We know that. There's going to be bad decisions from Scott Skiles, left, right, and center. But Lord Alfred Payton, he does have the talent. A lot of patience has been required from him this season, absolutely no doubt. And one of the things that was really key with him last year was the fact that he was like a 7 assist, 2 steals guy down the stretch, and he hasn't approached that. But he looks like he's getting back into it now, finding his groove, and yeah, all he needed was me to call him out the other day. Clearly, that's all that Lord Alfred required. The dart of the night, Reggie Jackson, wasn't his greatest performance. 29 minutes for Jackson. 13 points, 1 rebound, 5 assists on 6 of 14 shooting. That's not horrific. It's not great, though. But, you know, you would expect a little bit more from Reggie. Still, he's easily a top 60 player on the 19, 3.5, 6 with 1.5 triples and a steal. These are pretty good numbers, especially the threes, when you weren't expecting him necessarily to be a 1.5 three-pointer guy. It was one of the things that was a detriment to his game. He needs to get his steals up to 1.5, and then he can be a real top-flight point guard. But I suppose a little bit disappointing to a degree, especially the drop in assists. He was a massive assist. I think it was about 8 or 9 post All-Star break last year. A bit of a drop off there. I don't look at this and go, oh, it's a bad game. Yeah, was Brandon Jennings going to take his job? Just another example, by the way. Brandon Jennings, 19 minutes, 0 points, 2 assists. It's not going to happen for Brandon Jennings this season. People thinking there's going to be a trade for him, I would put it about 5% chance that he gets traded, and I would put it about 1% chance that even if he gets traded, he becomes a decent fantasy player. It's the Achilles is a legit injury. It is a serious, serious injury. And yeah, look, we see it. Wes Matthews, Anderson Varejao, these guys all coming back from it. Wes Matthews is starting. Yeah, he's playing 35 minutes, but are they good minutes? They're not. They're not good minutes at all for most of the time. And there'll be the occasional good game, but you can't just look at one game and go, see, he scored 20 points when he scored 20 in the other 15 games combined. Back to Reggie Jackson, blipping the radar, not too worried. Hey, he just keeps going as he's been doing. Let's look at the perfect DFS lineup for Monday. Bring that up for you there. I wouldn't be surprised if someone listening to this podcast had this lineup. It's not crazy to have assembled this. Kyrie Irving at 53.6. I reckon he was a great play. Drew Holiday at 52.7. That was a little bit not unexpected, but he's a guy that definitely has upside. He's been a little bit underperforming lately, but that's a big game. J.R. Smith at 31.8 has been very streaky. I think I had him in the recommended plays yesterday. Jamal Crawford at 34.1. Without Austin Rivers, the last two games before this, he'd been putting up big numbers. And again for him, Nick Batum, 46.6. You know, I love him. He's really, really good. And he is probably the poster child for me this season of do not make panic drops. Because I mentioned it a few weeks ago when someone was asking me about do I drop Nick Batum. No. Dylan Gallinari, 41.1. I could have seen a way to get him into a lineup. Zach Randolph, 43.8. That one's maybe a little bit of a struggle because he's been up and down. There's not much trust there. Paul Millsap, 50.6. Loved him yesterday. And Nick Vucevic, 53.6. Also a great matchup. And that totaled 407.9. It's not an insane lineup to have built. There's nothing completely out of the blue. There's no crazy Kirk Heinrich in there or anything like that. These are all guys that all make a fair bit of sense. So maybe someone listening to this podcast did it. If you did, I would love to hear about it, but maybe you didn't also. All right, let's take a quick break for a word from our sponsors, and then we'll be back to talk the box score breakdown. All right, we're back doing the box score breakdown. Before we do that, obviously there's news of Derek Fisher being fired. Completely shocked me to wake up and get a message from Kyle. Hey boys, Derek Fisher is fired. And what's going on? Derek Fisher's been fired? It's a weird one to me. Yes, I've been very critical of Derek Fisher, especially last season. He made some baffling decisions with some of the lineups, refusing to play guys like Klay Anthony Early and playing Sasha Vujicic this year over guys like Jerian Grant and Langston Galloway, where it was batshit crazy. But he's coached better this season, definitely an improvement. He was never going to be a great coach. I didn't think it was a really odd situation, but firing him, it was definitely a shock. But if you can see a guy is not going to be a good coach, why prolong it just because, oh, maybe he'll get better? If you just go, you know what, this guy's just not doing it. A lot of rumors circulating about him as well. We know the Matt Barnes situation with Matt Barnes' ex-missus. Lots of weird Twitter rumors circulating about Derek Fisher and his Snapchat exploits. Maybe he's just a shit bloke. Could be. He sure acted like a shit bloke on the court for big stages of his career. Just a massive flopper. And a lot of people forget this. One of the biggest shitbloke things of all time when he played for Dallas and then said, oh, guys, I need to, can't play for you guys anymore. You probably should just waive me. I just want to go back to LA to be with my family. Next minute, playing for the Thunder. Like, you can go and read those stories. Mark Cuban has never held back on Derek Fisher. It seems like a massive shitbloke thing to do. The Matt Barnes thing, maybe just not a good guy. There's a big, and it couldn't possibly just be his coaching. There has to be other stuff going on. I would be 85% sure that this is a shit bloke firing, not a coaching acumen firing. Just that this guy's just a dick. I reckon there's a big part of that. Also issues I reckon with him and the Players Association as well. Just a lot of things not working out well with Derek Fisher. As of recording, George Karl still has a job. By the time you're listening to this, he may not. So we need to keep an eye out there. As for the changes with Kurt Rambis taking over, I'm worried because Kurt Rambis coached Kevin Love and refused to play him. No, he's not playing. He was Byron Scott before Byron Scott was Byron Scott. He would play Ryan Hollins over Kevin Love. No, we think that Hollins is the best bet to win. He wasn't. He never would be, and he never was. It was very obvious. And Kevin Love would come in and play 20 minutes and go for like 15 and 15 in 20 minutes. And Rambis would be like, nah, mate, you're good in 15 minutes. Maybe we'll drop your minutes a little bit. I'm worried that he's going to do something similar to Porzingis, but most of the time guys coming in mid-season, they don't change the rotation massively. They might correct a few things that were obviously wrong, much like Earl Watson has done in Phoenix and given guys a bit more consistency with their roles, which is fantastic. But not often do they come in and go, we are just changing the rotations and players changing massively. So maybe we see a point guard change. That's probably the biggest thing that I'll be looking at. Does Langston Galloway, does Jerian Grant get a bigger role? Maybe, but I don't imagine that happening. Definitely not straight away. The other one with George Karl in Sacramento, that team is just a complete mess. Quotes coming out from Rajon Rondo today. Yeah, we have optional shoot arounds and only three guys turn up to it. It's not all on Karl, obviously, but there's just lots of odd stuff happening in Sacramento, so we need to see exactly what's going to happen in that case. I don't imagine there's going to be quick go and jump on this guy, go and jump on that guy if Karl goes down. The only one I'd be looking at is maybe Ben McLemore or maybe Darren Collison. Collison should already be owned anyway, and I'd hope that McLemore could get a bigger role. I do really think that McLemore can be a decent player. That's transitioned us into this first game, which is the Sacramento Kings and the Cleveland Cavaliers. Rudy Gay was back, perhaps surprisingly. He played 27 minutes, had 16 and 7 with 4 triples and a steal. That's a nice Rudy Gay game. And Omri Caspi still played 29 minutes, so 16 and 6 with 3 steals and 2 threes. Probably his best game in a while. Not sure that he has to be a must-own player. Rajon Rondo, 16 assists. That's big. 7 points, 8 rebounds, 16 dimes, 3 steals. He was 1 of 8 from the field, and that one was a 3-pointer, and 4 of 8 from the free throw line. So that's quite a Rajon Rondo-ish line. You love 8 rebounds, 16 assists, 3 steals. You hate the scoring, and you hate both the percentages, and you also hate the 6 turnovers. Pretty Rajon Rondo-ish. More not what he's done earlier this season. More of a sort of a Dallas Rajon Rondo type of line. Willie Cauley-Stein, 30 minutes as a starting power forward, 13-4. Back to consistent minutes, but I say consistent now, and that might change in the next game or so. Still has some decent 12-team speculative value. Darren Collison was reduced here, 11 points and 4 assists. Yeah, my thoughts on him. And Boogie Cousins only played 29 minutes because this game was a huge blowout. 14-8 with 3 assists and a block. Not Boogie's best game, nor was it Marco Bellinelli's, who had 8 points in his 26 minutes. But as I mentioned, it was a blowout, so minutes were capped all over the place. On the Cleveland side, I did mention this in DFS yesterday, that there would be a concern that maybe the players would lose a couple of minutes because it's going to be a blowout. That happened. LeBron only played 31 minutes. Kevin Love only played 28. But they were able to rack up numbers, especially like Irving and James, in that limited time because the Kings' defense is so bad. LeBron James, remarkably, his first triple-double of the season, 21-10-10, a 3-2 steals and a block, so you're really, really happy with that. And J.R. Smith, 22-4 with 6 triples, 2 assists and a steal. He really should be owned. He's a really red-hot second-half player throughout his career. He's a guy to really pay attention to here. Tristan Thompson played 22 minutes in the start, 2 points. Yep, that's very Tristan Thompson-y. 10 boards and a steal and a block. That is exactly what he does. And Kevin Love was back after that one-game absence from a thigh bruise. 11-6 with 2 triples in 28 minutes. 2 of 10 shooting, obviously, hampered his overall value. Still no Matthew Dellavedova, who looks like he'll be back probably after the All-Star break now. He's obviously only impacting deeper leagues, and that allowed Mo Williams to play 16 minutes and had 8 points in that time frame. Sasha Khan, Jared Cunningham, Anderson Varejao, these guys all got out onto the floor, so that's a great sign that it was a blowout. The next game, the Chicago Bulls and the Charlotte Hornets. Jimmy Butler was out, Nikola Mirotic was out, and then Derrick Rose pulled a general soreness. Thanks, Derek. The Bulls got defeated. Kirk Heinrich got the start, and he entered the does the least with most club, 3-2-5 in his 26 minutes. He was never going to be a fantasy option. Aaron Brooks would be the guy that I would have looked at, but he was terrible. He was 2 of 12 for 4 points with 4 assists in 20 minutes. Obviously had the confidence to go and chuck up those shots. It didn't work out for him, though. If Rose happens to miss another game, Brooks becomes still a nice tournament GPP option. The guy that I do like here with Butler and Rose both sidelined, Etwan Moore played 32 minutes, 12-3-2, 2 triples, 2 steals and a block. Really putting up nice numbers. Now, Mike Dunleavy moved back into the starting lineup here, so I imagine when Butler's healthy, we're going to see Etwan Moore back to the bench. So his standard league value is not great. You might get one decent game out of him. With all these guys out for Chicago, Rose, Butler, and Mirotic, who I'd say are 3 of the top 4 players, I know I have a slight Mirotic bias, Pau Gasol was the only guy left, and he showed it. 22-10-7, 3 triples, 2 steals, 3 blocks. A massive, massive night from Powell. He was really close to the monstrous line of the night here. And Dougie McDermott got some extra run. 32 minutes, 14-3 with a triple. He is a player who scores, and he literally does nothing else. He gets you no steals, assists, blocks, just doesn't do anything. So his fantasy value is going to continually be capped by that. Taj Gibson struggled, only played 22 minutes in this one. Yeah, 11-7, while Bobby Portis played 20 and went 6-6 with a 3 and a block. Gibson should still be owned. Porter should still not be. And Tony Snell out of the starting lineup, but still played 19 minutes for 5-6. I would hope that when all these players come back that we don't see much more of Tony Snell this season. And Mike Dunleavy in his first start, 16 minutes, 8 points with 2 triples and 2 assists. He's probably, when he gets back to full minutes, going to be a 14-team league player. So I'm not rushing out to go and stash him unless I'm in, say, a 20-team format or something like that. Interesting to see Cameron Bairstow get so much run here. 6-2-2 with 2 blocks. Yeah, not really much to see, I don't think. Onto the Hornets. Nick Batum, massively red hot at the moment. 44 minutes, 19-13-8, 3 triples, 2 steals, 8 of 13 shooting. Just remember that he's a really good player. Kemba Walker, 30 points, 7 rebounds, 8 assists, 3 steals, 4 triples. Big game from him as well. And Michael Kidd-Gilchrist with the offensive explosion, going 7 of 14 from the field. He hit another 3, 1 of 2 from 3-point land. That is not something I should be. I just got a great tweet coming in from D. Jones. Hey, Damo, he called me. Cool, thanks, mate. I'll answer your tweet in a sec, but that made me laugh while I was recording. Michael Kidd-Gilchrist, 20-7 with two blocks. He'd been a little bit down in the last couple of games, but this is obviously a nice performance. He is 12-team holdable, not necessarily a must-grab guy, but you love when he can add those defensive numbers in because he is an elite rebounder for his position, and when he starts scoring and hitting threes and providing positive percentages, there's a lot to like there. Marvin Williams, 30 minutes, 9-5 with three triples of steals and two blocks. Big, big game from him. He has to be owned everywhere. And Cody Zeller dealt with a lot of foul trouble. In fact, he fouled out in under 20 minutes, 5-8 with a 3-2 blocks. You know my thoughts on him. I think that he can easily be owned in 12-team leagues, yet he's not in many of them. Spencer Hawes, 28 minutes, 13-8 with a block and a 3. There's no point to get excited there. And Frank Kaminsky, 5-4 in 19 minutes. Jeremy Lin, drop him in a 12-team league. 18 minutes, 2-3-2. The minutes are going to go between 16 and 24, which we've seen over the last bit of time, but you want them to go from 24 to 28 for 12-team leagues. He's well out of that. He's more of a 16 to 14, probably to 16-team league guy at the moment. The Los Angeles Clippers and the Philadelphia 76ers. The Clippers, a bit of a scare in this one, got taken to overtime, but in the end, they get the victory. Chris Paul, 19-6-7 with four steals. A really bad shooting night for Paul, though, 5 of 18. And DeAndre Jordan finished with 12-21 with three blocks. Similarly bad from the free throw line for Jordan, 2 of 7 from there. And Jamal Crawford, the extra minutes is really, it's really happening for him at the moment. 23 points, 3 rebounds, 3 assists, 2 steals and a triple. But as I mentioned maybe yesterday, you have to watch what he does. Yes, he'll score, he'll hit threes, but he's going to hurt in a lot of areas. You're going to cop a big hit in the field goals. He just doesn't rebound the ball. He's not going to block shots. The 2 steals he got is something that's not really... not really fantastic. I think that's fair to say. It can be a negative in quite a few areas. Cole Aldrich, 10 minutes, 10 points. Great. You know I like him if he was able to get an opportunity. And JJ Redick, 39 minutes, 23 points, 3 triples. A nice night there, but couldn't get his shot to fall either. Now, Paul Pierce was out of this one due to rest, so my boy Wesley Johnson got the start. Terrible shooting numbers, 3 of 13. But he did it again, 7-9, but 1-3. Two assists, 2 steals, 1 block. Really helping out in those low-level, low-volume categories. And if apart from the field goal percentage, you're happy with everything else he's done there. He can be owned in 12-team leagues, but it has to be on the right 12-team team. I thought that Lance Stephenson was a chance to go off. Well, he played 16 minutes, but he had 2 points. So, yeah, that didn't eventuate. On the Sixers, Nerlens Noel, 8-9, 4 assists, 4 steals, 1 block. A really great fantasy line again without cracking double digits in points. And Jeremy Grant had a big game too, 17-11, and he had a block. That's a really nice performance. But when you go 6-7 from the field and play those extra minutes, that sort of inflates his numbers. He's not someone that I'm going to be going and grabbing in 12-team leagues unless one of Noel or Okafor goes down. Speaking of Okafor, he was 14-9 with 3 blocks in 30 minutes. That's a pretty nice performance. And Hollis Thompson had his bi-weekly big night. 16 points with 4 triples in 35 minutes. You can leave him alone unless you're playing in a deep league. Ish Smith was back. 33 minutes for Ish. 16-9-5 with 2 steals and a 3. Great to hear that Ish Smith had a minutes cap of 24. Great, because he played 33. So thank you for all that misinformation, Philadelphia 76ers. He was brutal with a percentage. 7 of 24 from the field, but those counting stats are very, very sweet. And Bob Cove, the best thing about I can say here is that he played 34 minutes. And the line's not terrible. 11-7 with an assist. That's not terrible. 5 of 5 free throws is obviously good. Missed all 6 of his threes, which is not ideal. But I'm definitely still holding on to Bob Cuff. Nick Stauskas played 21 minutes, 5 points with a triple. He hurt his neck. He doesn't have any real fantasy value. And TJ McConnell, just that solid 4 assists in 20 minutes. Really, really good streaming option for assist numbers. The next game, the Lakers and the Pacers. The Lakers kept this one close as well. What is it with crap teams keeping up with good ones? D'Angelo Russell was unleashed. Played 32 minutes, 16-5-5, 1-3, 4 steals, 1 block. Amazing. If you give the guy minutes, then he'll actually be able to play well. Byron Scott's still planning in advance that he's going to start after the All-Star break. Just start him now. Just start him all of January. Why set a time frame ahead? Maybe he'll be old enough to start then. Don't know. He has to be owned, Russell. So does Julius Randle, who's grabbing a stack of rebounds now. He doesn't do much in many other areas. 15-19 is good. A 3 assists. No steals, no blocks. That's going to be more common than anything else in those areas for him. And a pretty poor free throw shootup. Still not enamored with him as a great player. but at the moment, his fantasy value demands that he be owned. Lou Williams played 26 minutes, 13-3-1 with 2 steals and a 3. His value in standard leagues is going to drop pretty soon when he goes back to a bench role. Not an automatic drop straight away, but it is going to dip. Kobe played 33 minutes and just killed you. 6 of 25 from the field is not great. And by not great, I mean terrible. But if you own Kobe, you know that, and you know that you have to deal with that. So no complaining. Jordy Clarkson, 10-3-2 with 2 steals in his 33 minutes. In fact, the Lakers shooting, they would have won this game. They shot 31% from the field. That is horrifically bad. There was no Roy Hibbert in this one, so they went with the man, Bob Sacre. Sacred Bob. 15 minutes, 0 stats. That, you know what, 0 stats, but he had 1 turnover and 2 missed field goals, and that is probably an overrepresentation of how good he is. He's terrible. Tariq Black only played 15 minutes. He should have had 30, whatever, 5 rebounds and a block. I really like Tariq Black. I do not like Bob Sacre. Onto the Pacers, George Hill, 15 points, 6 assists and 3 steals. Just a nice, solid night. Well, Monte Ellis, after that really red-hot mid to end January, has dropped off again. 8-4-2 with 3 steals. And Paul George, I guess unsurprisingly again, poor shooting. 6 of 18, but 21-9, 2 triples, 2 assists, 1 steal, 2 blocks. He is what he is. He's basically a punt field goal percentage guy at this point. Miles Turner played 30 minutes and went 14-13. And Jan Mahinmi got 27 minutes. He had an issue with his face. He was on and off the court. But 27 minutes is not a bad total. 11-5 with a block. That's basically going back to what sort of numbers he was having before the ankle and back problems kept him out. With Mahinmi getting full minutes, Jordan Hill went back to 21 and he went 9-9. And Lavoie Allen played 18. And I think that's what we can expect moving forward. CJ Miles, 3-4 in his 16 minutes. He doesn't need to be owned in standard formats. Chase Budinger was a healthy scratch as well. The Toronto Raptors and the Detroit Pistons. Kyle Lowry, 25-3-7. 2 triples, 2 steals on, look, just fantastic shooting. 9 of 14 from the field. A big night from Kyle. And Jonas Valanciunas was red hot as well. 7 of 9 from the field. 15-8. 3 assists, 3 steals, 1 block. Don't expect those sort of numbers moving forward. The 25 minutes is still a massive pain in my ass, but that's just what Dwayne Casey does. He still provides value at those limited minutes, so don't be completely scared off him. Terrence Ross got hot, 18-4, 4 triples, 2 assists, and 2 steals. He's probably more of a 14-team league than a 12-team league, but there's a place, maybe. And Corey Joseph, 15-4-3 in 24 minutes, probably his best production in recent times. DeMar DeRozan, 17-7-6. You love the 7 rebounds and 6 assists. You don't love the inefficiency, but he's prone to doing that sometimes. And Norman Powell got another start and played 16 minutes for 1 point. This game was over. You can see Anthony Bennett played 2 minutes. DeLon Wright played 2 minutes. Lucas Nogueira played 2 minutes. And Bruno played 2 minutes. Those 4 players combined for 2 rebounds and 3 missed shots. Cool. Patrick Patterson and Luis Scola split the power forward minutes and did nothing, although the 3 threes from Patrick Patterson is pretty decent. On the Pistons, Marcus Morris, 14-5-6, 3 steals, a block, and 2 triples. He had really dropped off throughout January. He's picking it back up now. The minutes are pretty safe for the time being. I still don't think that he's necessarily going to end the season playing at that sort of level, but his numbers just, I don't know, just what they do, they look okay, but they're just not all that appealing for fantasy. He still probably should be owned, but he's not a must-own sort of guy. Andre Drummond, 12-13. Yeah, that's a very not appealing line. And Stanley Johnson did struggle here. 34 minutes, 5-5 with a triple and 3 assists. If someone drops him, I'd be keen on picking him up. Ersan Ilyasova had a poor game the other night. I think he was the dud of the night, in fact. He played 28 minutes here, 17-6 with 2 triples. So a bounce back from Ersan. Not a must-own 12-team league guy, but definitely not a guy to shy too far away from. And a guy that I talked about, I can't remember what day it was, maybe Saturday, maybe Sunday. Darren Hilliard. I do really like this guy as a second round shooting guard. He played 25 minutes, had 13 points on 6 of 12 shooting, hit a 3, had 2 steals and an assist. He's a much better player than who Reggie Bullock is on this team. I think that Hilliard can provide, be a really nice bench wing player for this team. And he's getting an extended look now with KCP out. And I think he's looked really good in doing so. So I think the Pistons can be pretty happy with that draft choice. And deep dynasty league players, I reckon in, you know, 2 years' time, Hilliard is going to be a nice 20-minute guy, and in deep formats, that's something that's, you know, can be very important. The Denver Nuggets and the Brooklyn Nets. The Nets with a surprise victory. Danilo Gallinari, he did his best, 24-3-7, 4 triples and 2 steals, another 7 trips to the line for him. And Ken Fareed had a big night, 29 minutes for Fareed, 22-13 with a block and really good percentages from him, but it feels like he's never going to crack 30 minutes. Gary Harris, another 40 for him, 17-3, 3 steals and a triple. I like him to have a big second half. And after a big stretch of games, Will Barton, this is what will happen to him sometimes. 21 minutes for Barton, 9-3-3 with a triple and a block. When you're in a bench role and Mike Malone doesn't fully trust him, these will be the occasional thing, but he still has to be owned. Emmanuel Mudiay, again, percentages, forget about it. 7-6-8 with 2 steals, so the counting stats aren't too bad. And our boy, Nikola Jokic, really, really bad night. 14 minutes. He's been poor the last couple of games. I repeat, I am not dropping him anywhere. I'm holding on to him. There's a couple of reasons for this. The shoulder, I think, has been bothering him. Yusuf Nurkic looked a little bit better in this one. Yeah, Ken Fareed was playing well. They went quite small in the matchup. I don't think there's much to be worried about with Jokic. I want to see him really suck for the next 2 more weeks before I go, you know what, he's done. There's going to be ups and downs, much like if you were going to drop Kristaps Porzingis. Ooh.
Porzingis.
There we go. Missed an opportunity. If you're going to drop him after he had a couple of struggles. These guys are rookies. They're rookie big men. They'll be up and down. It does happen. Now, Jokic is not quite as good as Porzingis, definitely. But it's something to keep an eye on. If he gets dropped, oh, I'm pouncing. After a big game the other night, Joffrey Lavernier, who played 29 minutes, only got 5 minutes here, 4 points, and that was always bound to happen. On the Nets, that young, strong run continued. 20-7, a steal, 3 blocks. Really, really firing up at the moment. And Brook Lopez, 16-4 with a block. I expected more from him against the Denver front line, but it's not a terrible return. And Joe Johnson bounced back after a poor game. 12-3-8 assists, 2 steals, 2 triples. Has to be owned in 12-team leagues. Yesterday, I said that Markel Brown is never going to do anything like he did when he hit all 5 of his shots the other night. Well, instead, he played 24 minutes and scored 19 points with 4 rebounds, 2 assists, and 2 triples on 6 of 10 shooting. This is the shooting streak of a lifetime for Markel Brown. I am not excited about... Look, the only thing I can say is the competition is not good. Bojan Bogdanovic, Wayne Ellington, these aren't good players. Maybe Markel Brown has found his range. He's more of a guy that I'm adding in a 16-team league, and if I want to get really interested in things, and apparently the other day I said, if you want to get really saucy about things, can anyone remember who I said that about? Because someone quoted me today saying that if you want to get saucy, you can add them. Let me know who it was. I can't remember. Anyway, if you want to get interesting and maybe take a risk, Markel Brown in a 14-team league, if you think that he's going to jump ahead of Bogdanovic and Ellington, he's worth a look in that situation. What about the point guard spot? Well, it went back to a pretty even split. Don Sloan, 26 minutes, 10-3-2 with 2 triples. Shane Larkin, 9-3-4 with a steal and a 3. Really, really low-end lines from these guys, and it's not worth dealing with most of them in 12-team league formats. Chris McCullough made his NBA debut. Great to see after that torn ACL. He was picked, I think, the 28th or 29th pick in the draft. He played 11 minutes, 2 points, 2 rebounds, 1 steal, and 1 block. I'm expecting pretty decent things from McCullough to end the season. The problem is he's got Thad Young in front of him and Brook Lopez in front of him. But by the end of the year, I think that he's overtaken Thomas Robinson, and he can be a guy that plays 22 minutes a night, playing the backup 4, maybe at a stretch, even some backup 5. On this team behind Young and Lopez. I think that, yeah, he will definitely overtake Thomas Robinson's role on this team. And that new guys in 20-team leagues, in 30-team leagues, you really have to have a look at him. Wayne Ellington only 19 minutes with the emergence of Markel Brown. And that's just way too long, speaking about a team that is dealing with Wayne Ellington and Markel Brown. The Portland Trailblazers and the Memphis Grizzlies. Dame Lillard, 33-4-5, 5 triples, a steal and a block. That's a very, very full line. Well, CJ McCollum went 21-3-6 with 3 steals and a block. Again, big nights from their big players. Alan Crabb returned from an illness and played 21 minutes, but 13-4 with 3 steals and a block. I'm not overly excited about that because he's just a scoring sort of player. The 3 steals and a block is great, but how often am I going to rely on Alan Crabb to do that for me? The steals, maybe, because he has been, you know, way up in that area. Like, he's taken it to a completely different level than where he was last season. He's at 1.3 over the last month, but the blocks, no. He's one of these players who, and I'm always a bit skeptical, who have just taken their field goal percentage up crazy amounts. His first 2 years in the league, 36-41. This year, 48. The last month, 50. He did look good in summer league. I was just talking to my son about him in summer league today. Actually, what a weird conversation to have with an 8-year-old. Watched Alan Crabb at summer league. Cool. Thanks, Dad. and he looked good there. And he's looked pretty good this year. So you know what? The rankings for the season, he's a top 100 guy over the last 2 months. He's a top 75 guy over the last month, even in limited minutes. But what he's doing, it's because of his percentages. So if you're looking for a bump, he hasn't missed a free throw in the entire month. If you're looking for a bump in your percentages, if you're looking for a wing who's not going to hurt your field goals and he's going to add some threes and some steals, yeah, Crabb can be the guy. I'm not falling over myself to go and add him, but he is proving me wrong to a degree this year. Gerald Henderson, huge minutes from him again. It was an overtime game, 35 minutes, 16-3 with two triples, an assist and a steal. In a 14-team league, I reckon you have to add him. In a 12-team league, I'm sure I can find better. And Al-Farouq Aminu played 40 minutes but did nothing with them, 4, 5, and 3. While Myers Leonard got the start, the Blazers did the switcheroo. They went from Mo Harkless to Leonard, and Leonard played the Noah Vonleh role. Which, why is he playing less minutes when he moves as a starter than what he was as a backup? You're down one big man. So let's move the guy who's playing off the bench and playing more minutes into the starter's role, but then play him less minutes. Yeah, he wasn't great, but he wasn't horrible to start off. 3 points and two rebounds. He just doesn't appear like he's going to get it turned around for standard leagues. Mason Plumlee, 24 minutes, 4 and 6 with two assists. Really, really limited at the moment. I don't really understand why. He is, to me, their best big man by a fair distance. Ed Davis had a good night, 7 and 8 with a steal and three blocks. He's way too up and down for me to have much interest in standard formats. Overtime game, and Marc Gasol got hurt. He was dealing with a leg injury before the game. He's now got a right mid-foot injury. He lasted 11 minutes and went 11-3-2. That's not great if you're a Marc Gasol owner or fan or Grizzlies fan. The great thing is that we've got the All-Star break. So maybe he misses one game. I will be shocked if he plays in the Grizzlies next game. And then we wait and see what happens over the next 2 weeks to see what other news we get. But hopefully it's not too serious. With Gasol out, Zach Randolph played 40 minutes, 26-9-4, and he should be owned at this point, putting up some nice numbers again after a really lean couple of months. And Mike Conley picked up the scoring slack, going 27-3-3 with two triples and a steal in his 33 minutes. Jeff Green, 12-6 with two blocks. This is more of the Jeff Green we're used to, even in 39 minutes. And Matt Barnes had a low-key line, 5 points, but a triple one and two rebounds and two assists. So not too bad there, but I still think that Barnes should be owned in 12-team formats. They gave Tony Allen 39 minutes, which is way too many, 8-7, and Courtney Lee had 3-2 in his 25. Even with Marc Gasol out, Ryan Hollins played 6 minutes and was bad in them. They need Brandon Wright back if he's actually still alive. The Orlando Magic and the Atlanta Hawks is a back-to-back between these two teams. Nick Vucevic hit the game winner, 28-13 in overtime, 6 assists, 1 block. Huge game from him. Already talked about Lord Alfred, and Evan Fournier started in place of Toby Harris again. 16-3-4, 3 steals, 3 triples, a big game there. Own him for the time being. Let's see how this plays out. But he was definitely out of favor for about a week, and he's jumped back into it now. Mario Hezonja also got big run, 32 minutes, 14-9-3 with two triples. He's still a deeper league sort of guy. And Vic Oladipo wasn't his greatest night, triple one, but 9-4-8 with eight assists is good numbers. But the scoring and the shooting was well down from Oladipo. Aaron Gordon, not quite the heights of the last game, but still a 12-10 double-double with a triple one and three assists. I'll say it again, he has to be owned absolutely everywhere. I can't see any reason why you wouldn't be owning Aaron Gordon unless you're in, say, an 8-team league, maybe even a 6-team league. Paul Millsap, 22-13, 6 assists, 4 steals, 1 block, 3 threes. This guy is so amazingly underrated in fantasy and in NBA circles. And Al Horford, 27-6 with 2 blocks and a 3. So big games from their best players. Kyle Korver, he is looking a bit better now. 16-3-4, 2 steals, 4 triples. That's 2 good games in a row from Korver. He's played 36 minutes in this one. He's starting to look more Kyle Korver-ish. He's worth an add if he's available in a 12-team league, just to see how it plays out. I don't see him going back to that top 50 guy from last season. Don't see that happening. But he could keep himself in the top 100 for the second half of this season. Kent Bazemore scored 5 points, but at least he gave you 13 boards, 4 assists and a steal, so a nice night there. And Jeff Teague, 21-3-5 with 3 triples in 34 minutes, a big game from him. While Dennis Schroeder went 6-1-6 in 19 minutes. Still holding Schroeder. You got one more game to hold before we see what happens at the trade deadline. And then again, if he's still there, see you later. The New Orleans Pelicans and the Minnesota Timberwolves. The Pelicans, big victory on the road here against a Timberwolves team who was on fire. Drew Holiday was massive. Only 28 minutes, 27-6-9, 3 steals and 3 threes. People do underestimate how good this guy is as well. That's a big night. And Ryan Anderson had 26 points with 3 triples, a steal and a block. So a good night from Rhino. He'd been quite down in form recently also. Anthony Davis, 27-8, 2 steals. Look, it's pretty ho-hum from him, but it's still really good performance. And Norris Cole, unsurprisingly, couldn't keep up his red-hot scoring. 10 points, but 3 rebounds and 6 assists still has to be held. But there are going to be lots of up and downs when a player is that bad. Bryce DeJean-Jones started in place of Tyreke Evans again. 12 minutes for him. He was a speculative deep league guy, but the last couple of games he's really stunk. So you can probably move on from him in most situations. And really, there's just a lot of crap on this bench. Tony Douglas, Alonzo G, Luke Babbitt, they all got minutes in the teens, and none of them really pique our fantasy interest. On the Timberwolves, Karl Anthony Towns, 19-12 with a block. Pretty good. So is Gorgui Dieng at 12-12 with 4 assists and a block in 31 minutes. Amazing. They can't play together, apparently. Zach LaVine played 28 minutes with Kevin Martin out again, 12-2-2, and add 3 blocks with a triple. He has to be owned. And Andy Wiggins, 15 points and the customary 0 rebounds, 0 threes, 0 steals. Still had 2 assists and 2 blocks and a poor shooting percentage. You know, Maya. And look, I want people to get confused. I think that Andrew Wiggins is going to be a really good player. I think that he's already a really good player in some areas, but it doesn't mean that he's a good fantasy player. He is not a good fantasy player, and I don't see him ever being the same fantasy player that he is real-life player. Rick Rubio, 11-5-7 in 27 minutes. Yeah, that's basically what you sign up for with Rubio. There was no Nick Pekovic. There was no Kevin Garnett in this one. You also got to see Tyus Jones, which I'm wrapped about. 3-3-5 in 12 minutes. Really love me some Tyus Jones. I think he's going to be a very nice contributor over the next 4 or 5 seasons as he grows into a role as a backup point guard in the league. Shabazz Muhammad also had a nice night, 14-9 in his 25 minutes. The last game of the night, the Oklahoma City Thunder, the Phoenix Suns. The Thunder got the victory pretty easy, but they still played Durant and Westbrook big minutes. Durant, 32-6, 5 triples, 1 steal, and 2 blocks. Or Durant went, not Durant, Westbrook, 29-8-8 with 2 threes and 2 steals. These guys just continue to rack up numbers like they're going out of style. And my boy Dion Waiters finally did something. 41 minutes, 15 points, 4 assists, 3 steals, 2 threes, 1 block. The Suns' backcourt is no joke in terms of matchup-wise. It's a bump, but even that, I didn't see Waiters really coming through there. Also got campaign up. I thought that he was a really nice DFS play. He got 21 minutes, 11-4-4 with 3 triples. Really returned value there. Nice to see him getting back amongst it. Enes Kanter, 11-6. Steve Adams, not a great night, 6-4 with 2 assists. It was his lowest minutes he's played basically over the last week or so. Not a great night from Adams. He was plagued by foul trouble, as was Ibaka, who went 8-5 in his 27 minutes. This is the best buy low opportunity for Serge Ibaka. And when I talk buy low, you have to really buy low. Now, someone was discussing with me a trade today. They wanted to get Brandon Knight on their team. Like, how about I trade Jonas Valanciunas? You know, I'm punting rebounds and double-doubles. Okay, fine. But that's not buying low on Brandon Knight. This is a guy you don't even know is going to come back and play. He might come back and play, but it's not buying low. That's fine. You don't need Valanciunas' rebounds, but where are you going to get his 60% from the field if you're switching for a guy who's 41%? You really... And if you miss out on Knight and you don't get him and you keep Valanciunas, I think the risk of doing it is not... It's not worth it in that sort of case. Again, and as I say, when I bring up these examples, I'm not calling out the person or having a go at you. I just want to explain my thought process behind it. That's not buying low on Brandon Knight. You need to buy... like actually low. And you know, Serge Ibaka, buying low on Serge Ibaka is not throwing Jonas Valanciunas at him. It's throwing, think of a name, Josh. It's not throwing Al Horford at him, I know that much. It's throwing Toby Harris at him, another guy who's struggling, so maybe he's not the best option. It's throwing, here's another name that we can look at, Ryan Anderson at Serge Ibaka. It's throwing Jeff Green at Serge Ibaka. That's buying low. It's throwing Ken Fareed at Serge Ibaka. That's the sort of thought process that I mean when you want to really buy low on a guy. On the Suns, Alex Len, 23 minutes. Just need him to get more. He was really good. 13 and 8, 2 steals and a block. Think he should be owned in 12-team leagues. Tyson Chandler played more than him and was decent as well. 11 and 7 with a block. Len has got the most upside by a long way. Markieff Morris, 32 minutes, 23 and 7, 3 assists, 2 steals and a block. This is the Markieff that we were hoping to see at the start of the season and that we know that he can be. Has to be owned everywhere. I know people have gone worried he's going to get traded. Now, we're all saying, let's hold on to him in case he gets traded. Now it's like, oh, I'm scared he's going to get traded and go to a team where he's not going to play as much. That's a big possibility. And if you can sell high, and a real sell high, you do it. If he stays in Phoenix, he's going to have potential top 50 value the rest of the season. Archie Goodwin looks good as well. 20 points, 4 rebounds, 7 assists. His value is obviously tied directly to Brandon Knight. And if he returns, Devin Booker, not the greatest night. He did foul out in his 29 minutes, 6, 3, and 4 on 1 of 8 shooting. And the Jordan McRae situation is not working out as well as I hoped it would have. 3 minutes for him, and he went scoreless completely. Mirza Teletovic had 17 points in his 20 minutes off the bench. All right, we are done with that portion of the show. I'm going to be back in approximately 30 seconds, and then we're going to transition to DFS. But before we transition to DFS, I'm going to cover your Dynasty questions in Dynasty Corner. I saw ya. Sent in. First one comes from Adam Santana, who's on Twitter at AdamSantanaLTF. He says, I was hoping to get your opinion on this new trade my friend is making for a dynasty league. Gordon Hayward, Kevin Love, Zaza Pachulia for Kristaps
Porzingis
and Thad Young. Who wins there? Interesting question. And the reason I highlight it, because you might have whatever opinion you have on the trade. To me, the Hayward Love side wins, but it does depend a lot on your team. And that's the beauty of Dynasty Leagues. Where are you positioned? Are you looking to win a title in the next 1 to 2 years, or you think you've got a really strong team now? Because Hayward and Love, they're not even old, but they're good. They're really good now. Now, Porzingis is good as well. Don't get me wrong. He might become something special. But I think that I would rather have the two guys who are potential top 30 players rather than one guy who's a top 30 player. The Thad Young for Zaza, I think, yeah, Zaza might fall off earlier than Thad Young. Thad Young isn't destined to have this sort of value for very much longer either. He's a lot older than you think too. So to me, they're a bit of whatever. It's basically Hayward and Love for Porzingis, and that's the way that I'm looking at this here. It depends. It depends on your team. But, Hayward is young. Love is not old. These guys are not old players. We're not talking Tim Duncan. We're not talking LeBron James even. We're talking about guys who are prime, like in their prime. So I would generally, and people can get a little bit wrapped up in youth, and it happens especially come draft time in dynasties and dynasty startup leagues. They get very wrapped up in youth. Now, Porzingis is good. Don't get me wrong. I love Porzingis a lot. Like he's a fantastic player, and I've been as high on him as basically anybody through the draft process and coming into the season. But to get two guys basically for the price of of him, it feels steelish. If we look at their ranks on the season, Hayward comes in at 36, Porzingis comes in at 49, and Love comes in at 30. So for this season, you're getting the two best players. I would say for next season, you're going to have the two best players. Maybe the season after, Porzingis jumps and becomes a top 20 guy. Maybe. That could happen. But I would rather guys who are in the middle of their prime and can give me that production now. And that's something that in a dynasty league, you can grab guys who maybe have, you know, maybe have this, I don't know what the right word is. It's the hyped guys versus the guys who don't get the hype. Now, Hayward doesn't get much hype. Love is, you know, up and down with what he gets. It's very dependent on how you look at it. But you can also get some great value for guys like Porzingis, especially if you're in a situation, I'm competing now. You're getting yourself two top 35 players for a top 50 guy. It's a big, big bargain. You might sacrifice Porzingis being a top 10 player. He might only ever be a top 35 guy. That's a risk, and that's part of the fun of dynasty leagues. Julio Torrijos asks a question, a more general question. How do you evaluate and ultimately decide between keeping established players and rookies / up-and-coming players? Example, Millsap versus...
Porzingis.
Getting him into a lot of questions here today. Basically what I just said there, Julio. How do you evaluate? Well, it depends on how your team is made up. Are you a chance to compete for a title this year? Then, generally, for guys like Porzingis, if I can trade Porzingis to get Millsap now, absolutely I do it. Now, Millsap is older than Hayward. He's older than Love. So those two guys we talked about earlier. Now, Millsap is clearly a better player than Porzingis at the moment. But he's older than you think. He might only be this good for two more years, and then he might start to drop off and become, you know, and then I would say within 2 years' time, Porzingis will be a better player than Millsap within 2 years' time. It all depends on how you're positioned and what the rest of your team looks like. And, you know, are you sitting in the top three this year? Are you just outside the playoffs? If you're just outside the playoffs, grab Porzingis. If you're in the top three, turn Porzingis into Millsap and give yourself that extra bump to win yourself a title. That's how I look at it. But there is definitely a... There's no exact science to doing it. It's all about looking at, you know, where is the value in these guys. And Porzingis' name value is through the roof at the moment. For a rookie, yeah, it's massively through the roof. You can get some value from him. You get Millsap, who's borderline a top 10 guy this year. You absolutely do it. But if you're sitting at the bottom of your standings and you've got Porzingis, you don't go and get Millsap because, you know, he's... You know, another thing to look at is when guys hit 30, they don't get better. And when they hit 29, they don't get better. It's an upwards rise. 24 to 27, 28 is their peak. And then it's downhill. Millsap's over that. So what you see from him now, by the end of next season, it'll probably be marginally worse. The season after, it'll be worse again. Look at Al Jefferson. 2 years ago, 22 and 10 guy. 2 years later, he's 31 and he's 12 and 6. Big drop-offs for some of these guys. Big drop-offs. And it all comes down to very specific cases and very, very situation-dependent as well. Drew Way has a good question here. He goes, I have a dynasty league strategy question. I'm in a 12-team, 9-category head-to-head dynasty league. I'm currently 4 games out of the playoffs with 1 game equals a category. My team is loaded with win-now guys that I most likely can't keep due to their contract or their age, like CP3 at $63 of a $200 cap, and it would cost $68 to keep, or Dirk. Do you think I should be a buyer and try and sell young, cheap assets like Kelly Olynyk for a better win-now guy, or do you reckon I should fold and try to trade guys like Dirk and CP3 for future assets? As a side note, I've done pretty well restocking the metaphorical dynasty cupboards from year to year, and my league is extremely active with regards to the waiver wire and trade. Thanks. Thanks, Drew, for that question. Lots of information in that. You're 4 games out. You can catch up, legit catch up 4 games in 1 week. Now, I don't know when your playoffs start. If they start this week, if this is the last matchup, which is what it is for the Red Rock Listener Leagues, by the way, excluding the Red Rock Dynasty League, this is the last matchup before playoffs. If you've got one matchup before playoffs, getting 4 games, yeah, you're probably not going to be able to do that. So, yeah, I would be inclined in that sort of situation and trading away these expensive contracts to try and get some other assets. But you're 4 games out of the playoffs. I would be, you know, looking to, and it all depends who you're going to get. That's very dependent. What players are you going to get for your young cheap assets? I would be inclined to at that point battling for the playoffs. Now, if you look at the team that's on top, or the top two teams, and you've got no chance of beating them, and you go, there is no chance, no matter who I get from these other, I'm 2 to 3 elite players away from beating these guys, then forget about it. Then no point trading an asset so you can finish fourth. There's no point in that. You need to look at these guys ahead and go, I'm not far off. I'm 4 games out of playoffs. I'm 8-9 games off top spot. If I get myself Paul Millsap, what's he going to do to my team and how do I match up? Yeah, I can get him. I can get him in these categories if I get these players. You need to really look at it that way. I think that you have to really look at that Drew, but and it really depends on where that top team is. But I would be, initially, my initial thought is to sell some assets and try and get some players and make a run at it, because you can catch up that in 1 week. But if the top two spots in those teams are completely out of reach, then especially if you're not keeping a guy like Chris Paul, I'd pack it in and try and get some assets for them and build yourself up, especially if you're quite good at building up and moving around and navigating the trade situation. It all depends on where those top teams are and how you see yourself competing with those guys. All right, that was Dynasty Corner for today. Let's move into the DFS portion of the show. It's the first game. There's 5 games on Tuesday. Is the San Antonio Spurs and the Miami Heat. This is yuck for fantasy purposes. The Spurs are favored by 7.5 and the total is 193.5. Tim Duncan has miraculously been upgraded to questionable. He was originally ruled out through the All-Star break, but he is questionable. Maybe we see Duncan, maybe we don't. Not really using him for DFS anyway. Hassan Whiteside is probable with an ankle problem, but apparently Eric Spoelstra was coming out and saying you're going to see a ton of minutes for Whiteside, so that's odd given his status, so we're expecting him to play. There's a couple of guys that I don't mind for DFS. Let's go through the positions. At point guard on Miami, I really think Goran Dragic is worth a look here. He's priced at 5,700, and he's been playing a lot better of late, averaging almost 29 points across his last 3 games. He's had a 39-point game mixed in his last 5. The matchup is not fantastic, but the Spurs, for as well as they defend, it's not the point guard spot that they defend the best. So Dragic is playing decently well at the moment, and at 5,700, it's not an expensive salary. 5,000 for Tony Parker is not something that I'm interested in, but 4,100 for Patty Mills has tournament upside. He has dropped 22 in the last game. He's averaging 21 across the last 5 games. That's not bad, especially when he's got a higher score in his last 5 of 35. When we're talking 8-9x sort of value for Patty Mills, he definitely has some appeal in a tournament setting. The shooting guards, Dwayne Wade is 7,600. Hate the matchup. Kawhi Leonard, Danny Green, doesn't matter who's on him. Hate it. Not going to be using him. But on the other side of things, Danny Green, he's at 4,200. He's playing a lot better as well. He's dropped 24 in the last game, a 22-point average in his last 3. He feels like he's slowly getting back into it. Now, there is a lot of risk still associated with Danny Green, so I'm not really recommending him for all cash game lineups or anything like that. But the form is definitely starting to turn around for him, so that's a good news there. At small forward, Kawhi Leonard, he's at 7,300. It's hard to use him. I'm okay throwing him into a tournament and hoping that something happens. Even if his numbers lately have been okay, 34.5 average across the last 3, he's already at 41 in the last game. I just don't feel comfortable using him. I don't feel comfortable using Luol Deng either, if he's going to be matching up against him, nor do I feel comfortable with using Justice Winslow. This small forward in this position in this game is just not an ideal situation, I don't think. At power forward, Chris Bosh has been well down recently, 7,200. Definitely want to throw him into a tournament and see if maybe something starts turning around for him, but nothing else there. And LaMarcus Aldridge at 7,300 has been red hot. Definitely fine with using him. He's playing as well as he is. If Duncan's back, I probably would fade Aldridge, but if Aldridge is playing, the 41-point average across the last 3 is superb. His salary is not massively high. Fine with using him. If Duncan's out, David West at 4,300. He dropped 29 in the last game. He's a guy that I don't mind in cash, and I think is a worthy tournament guy as well, if Duncan happens to be out again. At the center position, Duncan, I mentioned we're not going to be using him. Hassan Whiteside at 7,800. don't trust him at this stage to be able. That's a big salary. Can he get to 40 points? Yeah, sure, but I don't trust him to do it. So I'd throw him in a tournament maybe, but he's definitely not on my cash game radar. The next game, the Washington Wizards and the New York Knicks is up next. The Knicks are favored by 2 points, and the total is 207. Lance Thomas has already been ruled out with a concussion. On the Wizard side of things, Chris Humphries is likely to play. He's probable, and Nene is questionable with a calf issue. The point guards, Johnny Wall is at 10,200. He has been playing fantastically. He's averaging almost 50 points across his last five games. His lowest score is 37.8. I feel like he's been playing above himself recently, but on a night with only five games on, and not great options in many spots, I don't hate using John Wall against Jose Calderon and the New York Knicks. Now, the Knicks are going to be using Kurt Rambis as their coach. We don't know exactly what he's going to do, whether that's going to change anything. So using guys like Jose Calderon and Jerian Grant, obviously, is probably a situation that we want to steer clear of. But John Wall does remain an intriguing guy to have a look at. But that salary over $10,000 is a bit of a turnoff. The shooting guard position, shockingly enough, I actually like Aaron Aflalo here. He's at 5,200. The Wizards are a nice matchup for shooting guards. He's been a 28-point guy pretty consistently over the last three games. I feel at 5,200, you think that he might be able to give you 25 to 28 again. And again, the Wizards are not really a restrictive team. Brad Beal is at 6,000. It's too much. Look, he'll probably go back to getting 30 minutes in this one after a 20-minute game in a back-to-back-to-back the other night. At 6,000, though, I just don't trust him to do it. He hasn't reached 30 points in his last five games. Now, he got close at 29.6 in the last time that he played 32 minutes, but I just don't have any trust in him. Langston Galloway, if we find out that the Rambis is going to make a change and start him, then I'm all for using him, but otherwise, none of the other shooting guards in this matchup have much appeal. The new coach factor is something that's going to play a part here. Carmelo Anthony is at 8,900. He's dealing with some knee soreness, yes, but I think that Melo's going to want to come out here and put in a big night. 8,900, it's a pretty decent salary, but I would feel shocked if Melo didn't have a big night here. At 40 points should be where he's looking at getting, and I'm not really worried about any defensive matchups on the Wizards. Now, Otto Porter, I think, is a great matchup the other way around. 5,400, he finally played two games in a row with decent minutes. Hopefully he doesn't go back to playing those 20 to 24-minute games. He had 39 in the last one, so I'm not too concerned. At 5,400, I've got a fair bit of confidence that he can give us 25 points. At power forward, Kristaps
Porzingis,
6,700. Been really good the last two games. Really, really good. But 6,700 is probably a bit expensive. I don't think that I'm going to be using him. And the mixture of Nene, Jared Dudley, Chris Humphries, and Drew Gooden, they can all go F themselves. I don't know why I said that. The New York Knicks, Derek Williams and Kevin Serafin, we can leave all them alone as well. The center position, Marcin Gortat. Is it 35-minute Marcin Gortat or is it 25-minute Marcin Gortat? If it's 35-minute Marcin Gortat and it's 6,900, then I feel okay about it. But the Knicks have been restricting centers lately, so I'd probably keep away from him. 5,500 for Robin Lopez. That salary has probably risen a little bit too much for me, and probably both of these centers are not guys that I'm all that overly keen on using. But with only five games on, you might be forced into one of them. And if you are, Robin Lopez is the guy I prefer. Boston and Milwaukee, the Celtics, 4.5 points. Favorites, total is 208 in this one. We're probably going to see OJ Mayo back from his hamstring issue, and Jared Bayless is dealing with an ankle problem. Again, he is listed as probable. John Henson has already been ruled out, so we're going to see more of Miles Plumlee, much to everyone's enjoyment. The point guard situation, Isaiah Thomas at 8,000. He dropped 45 in the last one, but the Bucks are pretty good defending point guards, and they have been that all season. Ditto for the Celtics. So Michael Carter-Williams, Jared Bayless, Isaiah Thomas, all of them are out of my player pool. The shooting guard spot, I'm not going to be touching OJ Mayo in his return. Avery Bradley at 5,700. He's more of a tournament option. He can get really hot and cold. This is a really nice matchup for shooting guards, though, so he definitely has to come into consideration. And Chris Middleton at 7,300. His form has been well down over the last 2 weeks, maybe. Don't want to use him until I see some sort of signs of him picking it back up. At small forward, Jay Crowder at 5,700, struggling as well, only averaging 19 points across the last five. Not going to be using him. Much happier using 5,900 on Evan Turner. The matchup is beautiful for Turner. He's been really consistently giving you those 27 to 30 point nights. He's averaging 31 across the last five. At 5,900, I feel relatively confident even in a cash game using him. Giannis Antetokounmpo at 7,300. We know the upside for him is pretty big. But yeah, consistency-wise, he's been a little bit down late. In fact, if you look at his numbers and Evan Turner's, they basically are the same. All their splits, averages, max mins, except you're paying an extra $1,400 for Giannis. Now, Giannis obviously has the bigger opportunity because he can play more minutes than what Evan Turner can. But you know, not overly keen on using Giannis here. The big men situation. Jabari Parker has been really bad lately. He's at 4,800. I'm fine with punting on him in a tournament and just seeing what comes up because their projections like him, the matchup likes him. His form, I don't like at all, but I think that he's in a decent spot for a tournament. Jared Sullinger's been playing well, 5,600, but we know that Brad Stevens is a master tinkerer. This is one of the best power forward matchup, though, for the Boston guys going against Milwaukee. There is 30-point upside here for Sullinger, so definitely want to look at him in a tournament for sure over Amir Johnson and Jonas Jerebko as well. But Sullinger is the guy that I have a lot of tournament upside with cash games. There's definitely a big risk associated there. With the centers, Greg Monroe's got a nice matchup heading the other way against Boston. He's at 7,900. There's definite 40-point upside for him. And on the Celtics, Kelly Olynyk, I'd love it if he could get anywhere into the 20s in minutes, which he hasn't been able to do, so I probably won't be using him. But Tyler Zeller has been... Brad Stevens has been praising him relentlessly in the media. He put up 27 points in the last one, 24 average over his last three. He's at 4,100. Sure, I'm okay with him in a cash game and even in a tournament setting. I think that he can be a guy that can give you nice value if you're looking for a cheap center because the minutes are there for him and his production's there and Brad Stevens is really liking it. When Brad Stevens likes someone and they get on a bit of a roll, they see it for a week to 2 weeks and then we all go, oh, look at this guy, and then we move on. Much like Brad does. The Utah Jazz and the Dallas Mavericks. The Mavericks are favored by 2.5, and the total is a whopping 183.5. Devin Harris has been ruled out, and Trey Burke has been ruled out as well. So the point guard situation, Hal Neto at 3,800 is going to get a lot of point guard minutes. He put up 21 points in the last one. This is not a difficult point guard matchup against the Mavericks and Darren Williams. Hal Neto at 3,800. I don't imagine his ownership's going to be very high. His minimum score across his last five has been 17.6. That's basically 5x minimum over the last five. Now, maximum is only 21.4, so you're not talking about big numbers, but a really nice cheap point guard to allow you to get some of the other bigger price players in, like a Steph Curry, Draymond Green, Jim Harden, Johnny Wall even maybe, one of those guys into your lineup if you can put Hal Neto in. 5,600 for Darren Williams, not a good matchup for point guards. I think we'll leave him, Ray Felton, and JJ Barea alone. Onto the shooting guards, going to be leaving Wes Matthews alone. Rod Hood is at 5,800. He's been playing pretty well, but that salary is continuing to rise, and it's getting into too high territory. I still don't hate it, and I think that he is worth a look, but his upside is probably limiting my enthusiasm at that salary. On the small forward position, Gordy Haywood, you know I love him. He's at 7,900. He had a big game in the last one, but it still wasn't quite enough for me to get too interested, and I do not want to use Chandler Parsons going up against this team. Joe Ingles and Justin Anderson, for as good as Anderson's been playing lately, I just don't think there's much DFS value there. Onto the power forwards, Derek Favors at 7,300. Love this matchup for him against Dirk. Bit of a quiet one in the last one. That might drop his ownership percentage down. I reckon he is someone that you can definitely feel relatively confident about using. Dirk at 7,800, it's not the matchup to use him. And the centers, Rudy Gobert versus Zaza Pachulia. Gobert is at 7,500. I reckon that's a great matchup for him. This is looking like a 40-point night for Gobert, potentially. He's definitely got that upside here. And even in the downside, I think low 30s is clearly where he should be there. Zaza Pachulia has been a little bit off lately, so I don't think we're going to be spending up for him. The last game of the night, the Houston Rockets and the Golden State Warriors. No spread released for this one yet. Probably waiting on the status of James Michael McAdoo. No, I'm joking. James Harden is questionable. He has got a finger issue. He bent his middle finger backwards, a bit swollen. He reckons he's going to play, so I'm not too concerned. Steph Curry is at 10,900. It's relatively expensive, but I think that he's one of the guys that you almost have to lock in. Against the Rockets, you feel like there's 50 points easy coming here from Steph. Pat Beverley at 4,600. Yeah, but probably not. And Ty Lawson, Sean Livingston, none of those guys have much appeal. Klay Thompson, the day after his birthday, 6,900. Yeah, I don't mind that salary, but it's not, I don't love it. There's a great positional bump here against the Rockets for him. And I think that there, he definitely does have some upside at under 7,000. Not massively loving it, but I probably would put him in quite a few lineups. Jim Harden, 10,800. Yeah, I'm not too worried about the finger. I think that he's definitely got 50-point upside here against the Warriors. At the small forward position, Harry Barnes is worth a punt in a tournament. He's at 4,400. Rockets bump is fantastic for small forwards. He sort of broke out a little bit in the last game, putting up 24 points. He could get 25 points, 26 points here, and really smash his value. Andre Iguodala, no thanks. Trevor Ariza at 5,800. Been well down the last couple of games. He had a couple of outbursts not long ago, but that's sort of dropped off recently. So he's a guy to throw into a tournament, but that's about it. At power forward, Draymond Green is at 9,100. He's averaging 45 points across his last three games. The ease of this matchup is beautiful for him. I think that this has got 45 written all over it for Draymond. Other power forwards, Terrence Jones is out, but that hasn't mean that Clint Capela or Josh Smith has been able to really do much of anything. So maybe I'd throw Smith into a tournament at 3,900, and Capela probably not. No one else really has any real interest in it, in anything, in this game. The center position, Dwight Howard is at 7,900. Bogut has been really restricting opposition centers lately, so I'm not sure I want to spend 8,000 on Dwight. He did put up 43 in the last game, but probably just a bit expensive, and Bogut not going to be using him. And Festus Ezeli is out for the next 6 weeks, by the way. The DFS picks of the day. Point guard Hull Neto, 3,800. Goran Dragic, 5,700. And Steph Curry, 10,900. At shooting guard, Danny Green, 4,200. Aaron Aflalo, 5,200. And Jim Harden at 10,800. Small forwards, Harrison Barnes, 4,400. Otto Porter, 5,400. And Carmelo Anthony, 8,900. The power forwards, Jabari Parker, 4,800. Derek Favors, 7,300. And Draymond Green, 91. And the centers, Tyler Zeller, 41. Rudy Gobert, 75. And Greggy Monroe, 7,900. All right, we are done today, guys. Don't forget to subscribe to this podcast on iTunes or on Stitcher and on YouTube and leave a review. It is super helpful. Follow me on Twitter and Instagram at redrock_bball, and Facebook is facebook.com/redrockbasketball, and enter into those daily contests I have on both Facebook and Instagram. Don't forget to check out Basketball Monster, all the great tools, DFS, seasonal stuff that we've got over there, and Hardwood Paroxysm with all their great information articles. There's going to be a few things coming out on Derek Favors. Some are already out. Not Derek Favors, Derek Fisher. So go and check out those articles over on hardwoodparoxysm.com. Reminder, Red Rock Listener Leagues, this is the last, it's a 2-week matchup, last matchup before the playoffs. So if you're striving for a playoff spot, you're going to go all in now. We are done. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya.